Your recording has started.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the IGO-INGO Access to Curative Rights Protection Mechanism Working Group call on the 20th of April, 2017. On the call today, we have Petter Reinforth, George Kiriokas, Paul Tattersfield, and David Maher. We have listed apologies from Phil Corwin, May Cole, and Osvaldo Nuova. From staff, we have Steve Chan, Evan Iridogu, Dennis Chang, and myself, Terry Agnew. I would like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking, not only for transcription purposes, and in addition, to please mute your microphones when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I'll turn it back over to our co-chair, Petter Reinforth. Please begin.
Thank you, Petter here. Okay, so let's start with the traditional new statement of interest. I see nothing there. So we go directly to point two, to discuss specific additional comments from GENESA members and from other community participants with substantive suggestions. And may I first say a deep thanks to Mary and Steve for that fantastic work on the summaries that have been sent out. It was very helpful. So before we go back to some of the IGO comments, I want to proceed with the overview of comments filed by some other organizations as well as individuals. And then we go back to the IGO comments to see what they have noted on specific topics. And if I'm not 100% sure what we have on the other organization comments, other than I know that the Internet Commerce Association, we didn't have time to go through last time. And I don't know if you have their comments available, but otherwise I can just give a quick summary on that. So the Internet Commerce Association, ICA, they states initially that they support all five recommendations made by the working group, particularly because the recommendations recommend the necessary adjustments and enhancements of existing UDRP and URS practice. And that's also, again, very important. This is my personal view. That is not, we are not suggesting any changes of the policies as such, but it's the recommendations of the practice that will enable IGOs and INGOs to more readily access these existing expedited and low-cost curative rights mechanisms to effectively respond to misuse of their names and acronyms in the DNS. I'll see where we have this. I think it's there somewhere. The ICA support, yes. Such an incremental approach is preferable when compared to the uncertainty and implementation-related difficulty of the alternative of developing a completely separate set of security rights mechanisms that would only be used by a small number of IGOs. And they also state that creating additional rights protection schemes that apply to only an extremely small subset of internet users is impractical and would only be justified if the mutual jurisdiction appeals clause to current DRPs would always offend the degree of judicial immunity that is generally recognized for IGOs. They also say that there is no such universal absolute immunity for IGOs in domain-related disputes, referring to our professor's report. And as George says, they are explicitly in favor of option one for recommendation four. Yes, we'll start that later on. On question two, they refer to Article 6, Théorie de Paris Convention. This recommendation eliminates the need for IGOs. Let's see where I'm there. Eliminates the need for IGOs to trademark their names and acronyms as a prerequisite for seeking UDRP and URS protection. And finally, we note that Article 6 protections are recognized not only by all nations that have signed the Paris Convention, but also by all members of the World Trade Organization. These two groups comprise the vast majority of national governments. And on point three, they say that UDRP and URS panelists should take into account the limitation and trend in Article 6 tier of the Paris Convention in determining whether a registrant against whom an IGO has filed a complaint registered and used the domain name in bad faith and supporting that. This recommendation will align the scope of Article 6 tier protections with its use as a basis for IGO standing. And on point four, clarifying that an IGO may avoid any concession in a matter of jurisdictional immunity by electing to file a UDRP or URS through an SNE agent or licensee. This clarification greatly respects the views of some IGOs in regard to the question of immunity. And I also said that, as noted above, ICA is generally supportive of the attempts made by recommendations 4 to seek an acceptable resolution to the jurisdictional assertions of IGOs within the context of contemporary international law. In those rare instances in which a losing registrant seeks judicial appeal and the IGO subsequently successfully asserts its immunity to the court's jurisdiction, our preference is for option one, as set forth in recommendation four. And what's interesting here, I also think is they give to further recommendations if I can were to pursue option two and require arbitration in situations when an IGO successfully asserted immunity against a registrant appeal, then that option should be amended to bar an IGO from seeking judicial review when it loses the initial DRP. As Professor Swain observed, allowing an IGO that prevailed in the UDRP process to avoid its waiver and rest on the UDRP result by invoking immunity while allowing it to waive that immunity by initiating judicial proceedings in the event it has lost to the domain name registrant will likely be perceived as asymmetrical and problematic. And second, if the working group should decide that option two is preferable, then WIPO should be barred from being the appeals arbitration forum, as well as any other UN-affiliated or non-affiliated entity that itself is an IGO. Interesting note there. So that's what I have on their comments. And I see Steve's hand up. Yes, please.
thanks, Peter. This is Steve Chan from staff. And this is actually a comment from quite some while ago. It's just a procedural comment for you is to note that the comments that are available and ready to be loaded into the ACU room are all on the left-hand side in the notes pod. So the one you just went over, along with UN, the International Atomic Energy Agency, et cetera, are all loaded and ready, thanks to Terry. And then if you give us a little heads up, a little forewarning, if there's other things that we'd like to look at, we can probably get those into a PDF and available for review.
As well. Thanks. That's excellent, and I saw that. I just wanted to quickly also go through some of the personal comments that have been sent up, because I'll go through just a few of the personal comments, and then I assess George is on the line today. I'll give you a couple of minutes to summarize your own comments also, because they are was rather long, but if you could summarize it on the topics. But first, I just note that we have one comment from Professor Jay Chapman, stating that I generally support all five recommendations and also echo the comments made by ICA and the ICANN ecosystem process concerns section of IT Coalition's comments. Then we have John Pepin stating that I wish to enter my comments and objections to IGOs being allowed any rights to domains over and above the existing rights, and certainly they should not have any higher rights than granted by a properly registered trademark. If someone has a properly granted trademark, then they should be entitled to enforce such rights when anyone seeks to abuse, violate such trademark rights, but that is as far as it should go. And then we have also comments from Richard Hill, referring to the proposals made in 2004. And I'll just go through quickly his final part of the comments, that some ideas for a way forward. As I understand the situation, a present IGOs do not agree to the current mutual jurisdiction clause in the UDRP, and there is significant opposition to the proposal to create the UDRP-like process that would force non-IGOs to agree to an arbitration clause. Unless there is a change in those positions, it might be better to explore the option of making it easier for IGOs to file a complaint through an SNE. Then he has attached a file which gives some ideas of what such a mechanism might be. That word file does not contain an actual proposal. It's just a straw man language that might be helpful in triggering further discussions. And we also have a comment from Mr. Ronald Edge, who's retired from Indiana University, saying that one of the worst goals of the current effort of all corporations is to destroy access to the national courts by litigations. Instead, the corporations want to remove any liability for themselves from courts and due process of law and enforce arbitration as only means of recourse. So it's I'm totally against the movement which erodes legal rights of owners of domains and remove their access to the due process on the legal structure in the course of their nation of residence. So Mr. Edge don't want to avoid the possibility to go to a court. And we also have a comment from Russ Smith saying that the commenter of the United Nations fails to understand the difference between the UDRP and a court review. And in the USA, a court review is not an appeal of the UDRP decision. The UDRP measures the case based on the UDRP while the courts review the matter. That's more of a comment on what the United Nations have noted on that. And Then I'll give it over to George if you want to make some summarized comments on your comments, summarized presentation.
Thanks, Peter. George Krikos for the transcript. Yeah, I think these were points I made during our working group's work, so there's probably nothing very new here. I did point out, though, that, for example, that WIPO hasn't been posting all the court challenges to their decisions and to National Arbitration Forum's decisions. And I know that they've been reading all the comments, so it's kind of sad that they haven't even added those cases, since I posted them. So it's not clear, if they're kind of like not presenting a true picture of how their decisions are, getting overturned in courts. So that's something that this working group should be aware of, and that's one thing I did want to highlight. And then I just commented on other people's comments, which I've already kind of done during our calls. So nothing particularly exciting or new, but I did want to have at least my comments on the record. Thank you.
Thank you. And then let's proceed to some of the IDO comments. I don't know if we... I think the public comment review tool where the staff has made section summaries is a very good document, and perhaps it's more practical to go through that on this point, where we can also see the thanks. We can also see the differences. And as first a good general note, that we had 46 comments, and where we what are some? We noted on the previous meetings that a lot of the IGO representative comments supported comments from WIPO and from OECD, but also from the United Nations and the World Bank. So if we look at the some of the initial general comments, as we know, WIPO has stated that our recommendations does not address the problems for which the working group was chartered. They have in many times also pointed out that IDOs have a special position and that needs to be considered in a rather different way than a traditional trademark owners. And that the correspondence from IGO legal counsels as well as the GAC advice is clear, that both in the terms of the scope of rights to support standing to file a case and the mutual jurisdiction, the UDRP does not accommodate IGO specific needs and circumstances, but a separate mechanism modeled on the UDRP would. That's also what we have seen both in our formal and informal further discussions with WIPO representatives that they definitely want to see a separate dispute resolution policy. And if that is created, the specification, the identification of IGOs by Article 60 can be accepted. But otherwise, they also state that even if we include some recommendations and not making specific changes in the policy, that would open up too much for other organizations with some kind of name protection that is not covered by the UDRP or the URS by today. And as we know, there is another working group dealing with, well, we'll soon start in that process to also have an overview of the URS and then by on the UDRP. But I think that WIPO want to avoid to open up any changes of the dispute resolution policies. And again, when we talk to WIPO on a separate dispute resolution policy, I have only heard references to the UDRP, but I presume that they mean that also there is a need for a specific URS version for IGOs. We also have, as we've seen, some organizations, unfortunately none of them are IGOs, but the organizations and representatives have supported all five recommendations. And we talked just a few minutes ago about ICA. We have the business constituency and also GC. And the general support from RSD. And from I2C, qualified support. But they were more, they were supporting, but they also wanted to see the comments filed by IGOs. So we'll see what will come up later on in the process. But I take it so far that ITC is generally supporting. And also GP enter comments, comment on objections to IGOs being allowed any rights to domains over and above the existing rights. GAC affirms his position expressed in the Hyderabad communique, as we have heard. And DK generally agree with the findings in the report. FICB also generally agreeing when it comes to the two possibilities for the court decision on mediation arbitration. FICBI refers to what representatives of GAC would see as the best way, but otherwise FICBI is generally supporting. So anyone that would like to make any specific comments on this part, I think that we may, on the follow-up meetings, go through more in detail what some of the IGOs have stated. But we I would like to go through the recommendations by numbers now so that we can see what kind of questions we still have to deal with. And when it comes to recommendation one, there's actually none that has stated anything against it. Everybody support it, although IPC doesn't support policy guidance document, but otherwise it seems that what we have stated suggested on recommendation one is acceptable. And as you know, it's we recommend that no changes to the European URS be made and no specific new process be created for INGOs. And I think that's what everybody that says that they support it, that's what they talk about. Then when we have recommendation two for IGOs in order to demonstrate standing to file a complaint under the UDRP and URS, it should be sufficient as an alternative to and separately from an IGO holding trademark rights in its name to demonstrate that it has complied with the requisite under Article 6 here. And here, of course, it's rather split it up. We can see that those that are against it is WIPO, we know, GAC, both that wants to see a separate mechanism, USD, IB and IPC that doesn't support policy guidance document. What I think is interesting to see that those that support it, it's not just organizations for internet users and lawyers and commercial views. We also have OECD supporting it, as I could see from the summary. And then when it comes to recommendation three, yes, Steve, please, see your hand.
Thanks, Peter. This is Steve from staff, and I know you're on your own here, so it's hard to look at the chat and the attendees list. So I was wondering if the working group might want to consider so staff's understanding of this exercise is to try to determine if there are new arguments or new evidence to review. Towards that purpose, the comments that were highlighted in the left-hand notes pod were ones that were not necessarily just simply in support of perhaps the WIPO or OECD comments. So those are the ones that we highlight for that reason, that they may have possibly new arguments or things for the working group to consider. And so for the review of the public comment review tool, one of the things that we thought might be useful for that review is again, to try to, well, I guess it's twofold. One of the first things is to try to determine if there are comments that the working group needs to review in that exhaustive manner to try to find out if there are new arguments. But also, towards what you're doing to make sure that they're classified correctly. And then, as George pointed out, we might not have gotten all the designations of support for the recommendations correctly, too. So we look forward to help from the working group members and make sure we get that right. So two comments, is whether or not we want to maybe look at some of these individual comments and then continue the exercise of trying to find if there are new arguments to look at, And then the second is, if we're looking at levels of support, if we want to look at the Excel sheet for a little bit to try to see what the macro level might look like first, and then go through the individual exercise of looking through this review tool to try to make sure we got those classifications right. Hopefully that all makes sense. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks. If we go back to that part, we'll see there are two recommendations that I think we have enough support that we just don't have to discuss so much further. It's, of course, it's the recommendation one, stating that what we're dealing with is for IGOs and not INGOs. And then also when it comes to recommendation five, that we can see that everybody except for RESG is in support of the recommendation. But that's the simple part of it. So as we know, we have the recommendation to just enter some recommendations in the current policies. It's a little bit about 50-50 on depending on the interest of the groups that have replied. And I would say that generally, if it takes to IGOs, they want to see, as I take it, reading the summarizes and their comments, they want to have a separate dispute resolution policy. And we discussed briefly last time, and that will probably come up in more detail maybe next week or in a couple of weeks, but in order to have a finalized recommendation and comments on that, we need to look again at the draft IGO UGRP, if I can call it so, that was created some years ago. And that, if you remember, we discussed it briefly in one of our initial meetings, but we didn't come to we come to the conclusion that that was not a practical way to proceed, and we also wanted to find a more as we thought it more simple solution by not creating a completely new dispute resolution procedure. But as you all know, the IGOs, and specifically WIPO, that has been also supported by other IGOs, want to see a separate dispute resolution procedure, and so we need to go through that old draft again and see if I leave it open. I don't say yes or no at this stage, but to see if there was something in it that could be used if we, so to speak, modernize it, or if we still think that it's not the best way to proceed to creating a separate policy. And as we also have seen from those that support recommendation two, referring to the fact that the probably number of IGO disputes would be very limited, and then it could be much more practical and better to actually continue with our recommendations to just use the URS and UDRP as is today, but with some further clarifications.
Hi, Petter. This is Steve from staff. I just wanted to note that George has his hand up.
I saw that, yes. Yes, George, please.
George Grigles for the transcript. When we started the call, we went through the ICA's comments in detail just to see if there was anything new. Were we going to do the same for the UN, the International Atomic Energy, World Bank, UNESCO, Universal Postal Union, and the International Finance Corporation? Like, those were the links in the email that Steve had sent out on Tuesday that everybody had was supposed to have read for today. Like, were we going to do a deep dive into them like we did for the ICA, or were we just going to rely on the summary? Like, I was under the impression, I think Steve was trying to make the point, that we should go through them just to make sure that there weren't any new arguments that we might have missed in the summary. We're going to defer that until later.
I think we...
Or did we already go through some of that? I can't remember.
We did that the last time, but we can... I'll just check it out again, see...
Did we go through all those last time? Or maybe I missed.
So I have noticed, but... for today, it was more to see what kind of specific notes they had on some of the topics. But let me see what we did. We went through...
George, again, I'm just looking at the agenda that we started with today. Actually, it's in the roll call in the notes on the top left pod, where it says the comments for review are going to be the United Nations, the ICA, and we already completed the International Atomic Energy Agency, World Bank, UNESCO, and so on. So I think most people coming to the meeting had read all those and were prepared to go through them just to make sure. And I know Steve Chan wrote in the chat that we hadn't reviewed them individually as a group yet, so we might want to go through them quickly.
Okay, yes.
Most of them were pretty short, so we could probably go through them very quickly.
Yep. So if we start with United Nations then. And the UN, they talk about specifically the mutual jurisdiction clause, when they say that suggest that the agreement in the mutual jurisdiction clause to refer a dispute to a national court at any stage of the proceeding should remain in place. They focus on the status of IGOs and also say that IGO cannot waive their immunities from national jurisdictions by agreement in advance, as is required by the UDRP and the U.S. This does not mean that IGOs are above the law. The forum selection clause provides an expression of consent by the participating parties to submit to a given jurisdiction. The mutual jurisdiction clause of the UDRP and U.S. does this exactly. So they say that leaving the jurisdictional clause of the UDRP and URS in place would require an IGO to have already agreed to appear before a court of national jurisdiction and therefore to have agreed in advance to waive its immunities. Should IGO subsequently assert its immunity, the IGO could be perceived as remaining on that agreement. And then they gave an example from the U.S. Supreme Court. Further, they say that arbitration as a common method for dispute resolution may not be a proper alternative to national courts as a means to appeal an UDRPA URS. Arbitration is a common method for dispute resolution and especially popular between entities that comes from different national jurisdictions, since the awards are valid in any country, regardless of where the decision was made. Let's also say that the UDRP itself mentions arbitration multiple times as a recognized dispute resolution method. And their conclusion is that they have noted on multiple occasions a simple means of allowing IGOs to benefit from the UDRP and URS processes is to eliminate for them the obligation
This is Terry from staff. It looks like Petter's line just dropped. Perhaps we could give him a moment to see if he can get it reconnected. If not, we can have the operator try to dial out to him as well. One moment, please.
George Carrico's here. While we wait for Petter, I can note perhaps that the GoDaddy argument is a newer one that we haven't seen before, but it's kind of distinguishable from other examples because there the registrant actually has a legal relationship, contractual relationship with GoDaddy and selects them as a registrar, whereas IGOs and registrants have no relationship whatsoever. Also, other registrars don't require arbitration. I'm pretty sure the TUCAO's OpenSRS agreement specifies Ontario courts as the venue. Perhaps if anybody else has comments, they might want to speak up while we wait for Petter to rejoin.
And Petter's rejoined us.
Yes, I'm here again. Okay, so yes, what I said is the light on the reasons enumerated by the OECD and of the further elaboration offered above by the United Nations. We urge all relevant parties to adopt an effective mechanism that will protect the public and prevent the misleading use of the names and acronyms of intergovernmental organizations. So, I don't see anything specifically new here. They think that as I take it, they want to see a separate dispute resolution procedure. And that was United Nations. And let's go for the next. Which is the International Atomic Energy Agency, and I'll just make it a little bit bigger here so I can see it myself. They say that these interests of the IGOs are best protected by excluding the registration by third parties of names and acronyms protected under Article 6 of the Paris Convention. As an IGO, the IAEA is entrusted by its member states with important functions to promote nuclear safety, nuclear security, etc. However, if a curative mechanism to protect IGO rights is considered, the IAEA submits that it is desirable to design one that IGOs may effectively use. Well, that's what we are working on. In effect, the real question facing the working group is whether it wants IGOs to resolve domain name related disputes within the framework of an ICANN sponsored mechanism, akin to the Uniform Rapid Suspension or the Uniform Domain Name Dispute Resolution Policy mechanism, IGOs to work outside this framework. On recommendation 2, they say that is a welcome step forward in this regard, as it formally recognized the legal reality that IGOs derive the protection of the names and acronyms from Article 6 of the Paris Convention. So thanks. It's interesting to see that this is one of those that seems to support our conclusion, our reference to Article 6 here. Like many IGOs, IAEA does not register its names or acronyms or as trademarks with domestic authorities. So the pursuit of such protection will be superfluous in the light of Article 6 here, and therefore an inefficient use of public resources. And despite this recommendation, the IAEA would still not be in a position to use the current or the proposed URS and UDRP mechanisms because of their mutual jurisdiction provisions. They said that acceptance of these clauses would likely require the IAEA to waive their immunity it enjoys under international law. And they refer to their statutes saying that the IAEA shall enjoy immunity from every form of legal process in its member states. This immunity facilitates the operations of the IAEA by allowing it to operate under the unified legal framework that its member states have created for it. They say that the dispute resolution and rapid relief mechanism proposed on the points 2 and 3 of the IGO small group proposal would allow IGOs like the IAEA to participate in ICANN curative rights, curative mechanism because final resource to a national court will be replaced by arbitration. They also refer to the WIPO comments the UN comments that arbitration is the standard mode of dispute settlement used in disputes between IGOs and other parties. Regarding the possibility raised in the initial report that an IGO proceeds through an agent or SNE in the current URS or UDRP mechanism, the IAEA is in general agreement with the comments of OECD that raise concerns that such an assignment might not be effective and may weaken an IGO's rights in the name, in its name or acronym. And that is a comment we have seen from other IGOs also. So they summarize that in light of the above, recommendation 4 should be revisited and amended to better reflect the realities of IGOs and their need for curative rights mechanisms that do not require submission to the jurisdiction of national courts and waiver of immunities. I see George says that the immunity actually seems to be functional according to their website. The agency shall enjoy in the territory of each member such legal capacity and such privileges and immunities that are necessary for the exercise of its functions. And if I may say some personal comments on that, also based on what George wrote, when an IGO refers to this kind of immunities that is necessary for the exercise of its functions, that's one thing. And I think, if I remember correctly, that we have discussed it in the previous meetings, that what we're talking about now on the main aim and dispute resolution policies, that is not the same as it's not so closely connected to the exercise of the organization's functions. So I'm not sure that the immunity claim and the immunity reason is at the same strength when we talk about domain name disputes. And I see Paul is typing something here, coming up in the chat. Waiting for that, we may proceed to the next comment. Now, as Paul says, it's not even defending their own assets. It is looking to seize others' assets for whatever reason. And the next is comment from the World Bank, International Bank for Reconstruction and Development. They say initially that the GNSO should reconsider its initial advice regarding IGOs. The World Bank supports the comments filed by other IGOs, including the OECD, and they also add some personal comments. They say that the World Bank's name is often misused in frauds and scams, and these scams can be perpetrated or assisted by the misleading registration of domain names, of course. And the resources that the World Bank has to expend to address such fraudulent domain name abuse must be diverted from the development assistance the bank has to offer for the world-sponsored nations. They say that our initial report refuses to make any accommodations for IGOs and seeks to force the IGOs to choose between protecting their acronyms or protecting their immunities that allow them to operate internationally without the constant threat of lawsuits in every member country. And then quickly, recommendation one, of course, they don't have any comments as they are not an INGO. As to recommendation two, they believe that the GNSO seeks to require two legalistic and technical tests before many IGOs would be able to even access the UDRP or URS. We said that the dispute resolution procedures generally require a claimant to prove that it has the right to assert protection for a name or acronym. And a convenient shorthand is to require evidence of a valid trademark or service mark in the name or acronym a claimant seeks to protect. For others, such requirement is often disqualifying since they don't register the names as trademarks. Well, yes, we know that. And there's also generally stating how expensive it would be to register the trademarks in all 189 countries. and they urge the GENESA to allow arbitrators in the UDIPN-US system to apply international law, which may include Article 60 of the Paris Convention. So again, this is not a no to our suggestion of Article 60 as the identification. It's in fact somewhat support of it. One of the easy way to identify, and I think that it's also interesting to see that the World Bank states that it would be so expensive to register their trademarks in all countries around the world. So they states that IGOs needs to have a more easy way for identification, and we have found one in Article 6 here. So, and then to Recommendation 3, I said that the GENESA attempts to mandate a second technical legalistic limitation. The GENESA proposes, yes, that we should take into account the limitation in the Article 6 tier in determining whether a resident against whom an IGO has filed a complaint, registered, and used the domain name in bad faith. And then they refer to Article 6 tier, and they said that the GENESA apparently decides to limit an IGO ability to argue that a fraudulent website is fraudulent unless the IGO provides that the website is of such a nature as to mislead the public as to the existence or a connection between the user and the organization. And such formalistic preliminary determination is not currently required for any commercial claimant before the UDAP or the URS. I take it as they are not so familiar with the UDAP procedure. I mean, everybody has to prove that they have some kind of name protection that is, as today, trademark-related. But a complainant would lose a case if it's not some kind of evidence or arguments in supporting that the domain name has been registered and used in bad faith and that the domain holder has no interest or agreements. So when I say that Article 60 was not drafted with ICANN or the UDIP in mind, no, we know that. And the attempt to use it to limit an IGO's claim that its acronym is being used in bad faith is unwarranted. An IGO should have the same ability to argue and prove bad faith as a commercial claimant. Again, my personal notes here, I don't see any problems with that. As we have noted, some IGOs may well have the possibility to state that even if their trademarks or their names are not registered as trademarks, that they have created some kind of trademark protection by using it. So Article 6 here is one example of what they can provide as evidence of name protection. But, of course, it's not. We don't say that IGOs thereby are limited only to Article 6 here. They can, of course, state that they have trademark protection. And it may be that when we come out with our final comments or on suggestions, we must be more clear with this, that we, of course, accept each, both INGOs and IGOs that can prove the traditional trademark protection. That is either, at least when we talk about the UDRP, it's either based on registration or use. I mean, trademarks is it's also, it can be used for services, and I'm pretty sure that most IDOs can show that it has been used for some of the service classes. So I don't see that as a problem. It's more of those IDOs that may not have, compared with trademark rights. So they also are referring to Professor Swain, his conclusion that granting mutual jurisdiction via initiation of a complaint or, for that matter, registration would likely be understood as a waiver of any immunity of the IDO might otherwise assert. And the GNSO has no reasonable basis to ignore this advice, so only by departing from Professor Swain's analysis and conclusions can the GNSO justify its preliminary recommendations on this issue. And we have discussed this also before, that we have seen some comments that stating that we have read the Professor Swain's analysis in our way. And I would say that taking any kind of court action, any evidence, there are always two parties, and each evidence will be readed in two different ways. But I think that we have clearly referred to what Swain has concluded, and as we also noted in most of these issues, his conclusion was that there's no clear reply, there's no clear answer to that. It's not just a yes or no to the questions. So, if an IDO would see it in one way, they are free to do that. But I don't see that we have misused or misread the Professor Swain's report. But that's also very good that we have it in the full in our public comments. So they said that alternatively, the GNSO suggests that an IDO could sidestep an immunity issue by simply filing through an ICNE, licensee, or agent. And they say that this suggestion is, of course, impossible to implement if a third party brings a case, well-founded or not, directly against an IDO, which will be left to defend itself in the UDRP proceeding at the risk of having waived its immunity in any later appeal. And in addition, even where an IDO is considering filing a claim itself, the GNSO completely fails to explain how this assignment trick would work in practice. Again, it might be that we have to be more clear on that point. I see this as more of a general question on this topic. I've seen other comments from IDOs stating that it's not possible at all to give a case over to some kind of third party or agent. So overall, the World Bank does not accept the GNSO statement that its present recommendations will result in substantial improvement and clarity regarding access to curatorized protection mechanisms. They say that, let's see if I have a good summary here. Since the GNSO is unable to come up with any viable alternative recommendation on this issue, so they refer to the small group recommendations and saying that it should simply be adopted by the ICANN board. And we have seen some other comments from the non-IDO commenters on the small group, the work compared to our open work. And then finally, recommendation 5, the World Bank agrees that the prior GAC advice IGO rely on public funds from their member countries and should be allowed to spend those funds on the public missions. They should not have to divert those funds to protect their acronyms against fraud and abuse in ICANN's domain name system. And I think that's nothing we have to comment on when it comes to recommendation 5. It's more of a decision by ICANN board rather that how to make it sure that IGOs can use the dispute resolution procedures without having to spend too much money on it. Okay, seeing no hands up right now, shall we take the next one? And these are the UNESCO comments. They initially state that they fully concur with the comments submitted by the OECD and United Nations. They said that it's worth recording that IGOs are particularly exposed to fraudulent registrations of domain names. And when it comes to the recommendations, they go directly to a recommendation 4A. The mutual jurisdiction clause of the UDRP. And they said that the working group recommends that no change be made to the mutual jurisdiction clause. Accordingly, under the mutual jurisdiction, IGOs wishing to initiate proceedings under the UDRP would be forced to agree in advance to submit to the jurisdiction of a national court in case of an appeal. UNESCO submits that the mutual jurisdiction clause, as it stands, is inconsistent with IGO's jurisdictional immunity. And they state that, of course, IGOs generally enjoy jurisdictional immunity. They refer to the United Nations privilege and immunities under the Article 105. And the United Nations immunity from jurisdiction and execution is also set out in Article 2 of the Convention of the Privileges and Immunities of the United Nations, which provides that, and then they refer to that. We'll see what they conclude. Point 10, by treaty, the international community has therefore granted IGOs full immunity from legal process to ensure their independence from any state and allow them to fulfill the objectives of public interest for which they were established. And they also say that an IGO would enjoy immunity in the case of UDRP appeal under every legal approach to immunity. Yes, I come to you, George, just in a minute. And I also say that national courts have no jurisdiction to determine the extent of the immunities enjoyed by IGOs. And IGOs would have immunity from jurisdiction under any of these three legal approaches. They also refer to Professor Swain in his memorandum stating that the jurisdictional immunity claim from IGO in this context would prevail under an absolute immunity approach, but also under a functional immunity approach. So UNESCO therefore submits that contrary to the recommendation of the working group, the mutual jurisdiction clause should be amended to take into account the nature of IGOs and their full immunity from legal process by also respecting registrants' right to have an unfavorable UDFP decision reviewed. Again, referring to Professor Sain, IGOs typically resolve the tension between immunity and judicial processes by referring to arbitration. But I have recommendation 4B that say that IGOs are not able to file complaints to an assignee, licensee, or agent without waiving their immunity. So, recommendation 4C. See if they... Yes, if IGO should raise a claim of immunity directly before a court, the mutual jurisdiction clause as it stands will leave no chance for this claim to succeed. For these reasons, there is no need to discuss the two options proposed by the working group. UNESCO reiterates that the best solution would be to avoid the termination of the IGO's immunity altogether by automatically referring to the appeal or arbitration. And George, please.
George Gregos with the transcript. Yeah, I just want to note that the arguments in the document appear to be almost self-contradictory. In Section 10B, they said, you know, with certainty that an IGO would enjoy immunity in the case of UDRP appeal under every legal approach to immunity. So they're kind of saying that they already have immunity for an appeal, but then they say, even though we have this immunity, we still want changes in the mutual jurisdiction clause, which doesn't make sense. You know, our approach is, you know, let the court decide whether, you know, the nature of the immunity. And we have Professor Swain's memo, which, you know, disputes the IGO's claims of the nature of their immunity to begin with. But the fact that UNESCO is saying, you know, that they're automatically going to win, but even though we're going to automatically win, we want to change the rules to eliminate the possibility, you know, that we might lose, seems very, very strange. Also, there seems to be something that's simply not true on point number 21, where they say that their immunity from legal process prevents them from appearing before national court at all, even if it is to raise a so-called immunity claim. That's simply not true. You could find many cases where people go to a court and make a limited appearance only, you know, to dispute jurisdiction or to raise immunity concerns. And all the immunity cases in the courts are because, you know, the IGO showed up to assert its immunity. So it's very odd that they would make that assertion. Thank you.
Well, thanks, George. Yeah, I agree. Well, the way I read it is that they, as I say, you can take, you're free to take, or try to take every case to a court, and then it's up to the court to decide whether there is immunity or something similar. But what if I read them correctly, I think what they refer to is that, yes, they are protected, but they want to avoid the risk of having the case in a court with the extra costs and time spending there, and also depending on which nation and which kind of local or regional court that would handle the case, it may even be that the court decides to actually deal with the case. So as I read them, they say that we have already a clear immunity, and to avoid the risk that that immunity will be questioned in a local court, even if we are sure that the court will make the right decision and say that we have immunity, so we can't deal with the case. It will take time and money. It's better to go directly to the arbitration. Okay. Anna Paul says on immunity, the United Nations Convention on Jurisdictional Immunities. Yes, maybe worth further study. I don't remember the working group looking at it previously. I think we had it, I don't have it in front of me now, but I think that Professor Swain has discussed it, and we looked at it initially. And from what I remember is that the UN stated that, yes, it's immunity, but every organization is free to refrain from claiming that immunity. And we took it at that time, if I again remember correctly, that if you register a domain name or if you start a domain name dispute, you are thereby also taking away your jurisdiction immunity in that case. But Paul, I agree, we can at least in the chat afterwards have a check again on the UN. George
Kirkos for the transcript. I just posted a link to a document that Paul Tatterspield mentioned in the chat room regarding the United Nations Convention on Jurisdiction and Immunities of States and Their Property, 2004. And he mentioned that Article 14 places restrictions on foreign states seeking to invoke immunity. I was just browsing through it and also noticed that Article 8, which says effective participation in a proceeding before a court, says a state cannot invoke immunity from jurisdiction in a proceeding before a court of another state if it has itself instituted the proceeding, which is kind of supportive of the notion that, you know, they're the ones that started the dispute. So it's, you know.
Yeah. Thanks. Thanks, George. That was something I had in my back head as a memory from what we had discussed on this topic some time ago. So that's good. Thanks. Okay. I presume we have another. We have 10 minutes left, so we have time to go through at least one more. And this is the Universal Postal Union that I made it more simple. That they've been a members of the small group. Referring to other members of that. It's interesting to see that WIPO, OECD, UN, NATO, ICAO, ADB, etc. And they say that in that regard, we would once more emphasize the fact that the protection afforded to IDO names and abbreviations under international law and various domestic status stems from public policy considerations and goes beyond the concept of trademarks. We know that, especially since such IDO designations are, as a matter of principle, not subject to the trademark registration requirements. The UPU must express its clear and unambiguous opposition to certain allegations that arbitration procedures would constitute denial of due process, or that arbitration would reflect a playing field that is tilted unfairly in favor of IDOs or tamed by poor judgments. I take this as a comment on some of the personal comments that was made. Uh, they say that indeed the unsubstantiated character of these allegations can be easily demonstrated by the fact that even the UPU itself was the subject of negative rulings arising from the .dpost.ie email objection cases. And it's evident from the relevant international law provisions applicable to IDOs that each organization shall make provision for appropriate modes of settlement, such as arbitration, in the light of their immunity from every form of domestic legal process. And such allegations also seems to ignore the fact that even in a hypothetical scenario where an IDO expressly decides to waive its immunity, such a waiver shall never extend to any measure of execution. And they say that I strongly urge ICANN to carefully consider and appropriately deal with the long-standing legitimate concerns expressed by various IDOs over the last years, and to adopt, without further delay, a fair and effective mechanism that shall recognize the unique status of IDOs in the DNS. If I read this in my way, I take it as it is a support of what we are doing. We actually carefully consider their ideas and have recommended a fair and effective mechanism that shall recognize the unique status of ideas with our proposals. I see no other specific. I take it as this is the only comments that they have found. So, I see no other suggestions or in fact referring to any other suggestions. It's just to state the importance of coming up with clear solutions for ideas. Okay, shall we take quickly one more? And here we have IFC, no, comments on IFC, International Finance Corporation, and again, they say that as the initial report suggests, IFC relies on its Article 6 tier protections and maintains national trademark registrations and related domain names both for its organizational name and acronyms and for key initiatives it undertakes to achieve important developmental outcomes. And these registrations and activities are essential to achieving our developmental mandate. So they refer to Article 6 here, but as I take it, they also have traditional trademark protection. I would say, in particular, we emphasize our continuing concern regarding Recommendation 4. They refer to Professor Swain, they say that Professor Swain's analysis does not fully reflect and is not fully consistent with their immunities analysis. And accordingly, we are not bound by its analysis or conclusions. In particular, we note that IFC enjoys other privileges and immunities, including archival and staff member immunities, and considers none of these waived by any submission to judicial process or otherwise. These immunities are accorded to IFC by implementing legislation such as the International Organization's Immunities Act, the IFC Act, similar legislation in other jurisdictions, as well as our Articles of Agreement and Principles of International Law. And Well, my note on that is that I take it as they say that they think that they have complete immunity. And yes, please, that's their conclusion, and they are free to take it to a court and have it considered that there. What Professor Swain say that it's not so clear on this topic. So I presume that many of the IGOs themselves, of course, think that they have clear immunity. Second, they note that Professor Swain's counsel that granting mutual jurisdiction would likely be understood as a waiver of any immunity the IGO might otherwise assert. The working group's assertion that its proposed outcome respects and preserves an IGO assertion of jurisdiction immunity, etc., is therefore incorrect on the working group's own terms. The working group is proposing rather that IGO would participate in a curative mechanism that, per the legal expert, is engaged requires an ex ante waiver of IGO privilege and immunities of unclear scope and impact, etc. Finally, we note that whatever the substantive concerns, by declining to consider the accommodation supported by the small IGO group, the GAC, or apparently the ICANN board, the working group is recommending an approach that impedes rapid or efficient resolution of domain name disputes or by registrants. And to the contrary, it is effectively proposing that where IGOs are complainants, they pursue actions outside ICANN mechanism at considerable burden to them, to both IGOs and registrants, in order to preserve legal rights well established and recognized under international and national laws. I like the claiming that we are overriding Professor Swain's analysis, saying that we are also incentivizing non-IGO complainants to pursue frivolous claims against IGOs within the UDRP-US mechanism, with a few view of arriving in national courts asserting arguments inconsistent with the principle of preservation of rights. To conclude, IFC is committed to a fair and efficient curative mechanism. We believe the working group has arrived at recommendations that do not achieve its stated claims and in practical effect infringe the established roles and rights of IGOs in the international system. Accordingly, we joined the World Bank in requesting the working group to reconsider its staff advice. We are happy to offer any help or cooperation you might reasonably request in this regard. Okay. So, time check. Yes. Thanks, Steve. We are 1 minute over the time. And this is so far we can go today. So let's I think we can use more or less the same agenda for the next week, going through the other IGO comments, and then also see what on the specific issues that we need to deal with. And thanks, Terry. I will take next working group meeting will take place on Thursday next week for 90 minutes. So thanks for today.
Thank you, everyone. Once again, the meeting has been adjourned. Operator Missy, if you could please stop all recordings. To everyone else, please remember to disconnect all remaining lines and have a wonderful rest of your day.